I've never spoken behind my son before like this. I'm grateful that God has worked in his life and my family's life the way it has, but today is not about that. It's about, this is a compare and contrast. His message, funny enough, had to do with the power of the physical and some of the repercussions of that. And sometimes when we're working on something and my wife is trying to muscle something, she'll say, can you do this? You know, can you open this? Can you whatever? And reluctantly ask me to do it. And then she says, when I come back in my next life, I'm going to be Serena Williams. But her comment has to do with power. And we all like a certain amount of power. It could be amazing. I mean, frightening, interesting, alarming, desirous. It could be all of those things power can be. I mean, you can take it from like the atomic bomb to a hurricane to a cyclone to a rocket engine, a weightlifter. Many, many ways we can discuss power. But today, we're going to talk about how it is that we get spiritual power. And let me visit a few examples, and then I'll give you the SBS. Come with me, please, to Nehemiah, chapter 1. Nehemiah, chapter 1. We find in Nehemiah, as well as a number of places, you know, probably it's best to go to Mark first. I'm sorry, I'm going to direct you there first. Mark 9 is where we'll begin. We'll begin in the New Testament side of things. Mark 9. Verses 25 through 29. It's a very interesting story takes place here. We'll begin in verse 25, Mark 9, verse 25. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying to him, "You dumb and deaf spirit, I charge you, I command you, come out of him and enter no more into him." The spirit cried, rent him sore, came out of him, and he was one as dead, insomuch as many said, "He's dead." Verse 27, but Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. And when he was come into the house, his disciples asked him privately, as if they're saying, you know, boss, master, why could we not cast him out? You clearly did, but why couldn't we do that? Verse 29, he said to them, this kind can come forth by nothing else but by prayer and fasting. If you recall, last week we had a message by Mr. Wendt regarding intercessory prayer and the importance of prayer, the command that we should pray for other individuals. And there are many kinds of prayer. There are supplications, which is pleading for someone, is another kind of prayer. But this is something as a dimension that's different with prayer. Some people think when you fast, you will go strictly without food and water. You know, usually on atonement, we say no food, no water, and it's one day. There are examples where you have food and water for 3 days. There are examples where no food, just water for 7 days, 21 days, 30 days, 40 days. All kinds of fasts. But what is the purpose of a fast? Is it to just make you hungry? Or is it to have you abandon your physical needs and to focus on something else? To just abandon your focused physical needs is not good enough. You need to, at the same time, switch your mind to getting to know God better, to concentrate on studying his word, praying, and asking him to show you who he is, to seek his face. A lot of times, people will fast to get what they want. And you find no real examples of that in the Bible, unless it's negative. You probably know of Daniel. Let's go on over there. Let's go to Daniel chapter 9. And there's a story there about him that tells us that he fasted against meat and desirous foods. He didn't fast for anything else. He still ate vegetables, but it was a type of a fast. And in Daniel chapter 9, we'll read that in verse 3. I'm trying so hard not to lick my fingers. It's killing me. Chapter 9, verse 3. Daniel says here, "And I set my face to the Lord God to seek by prayer and supplications," supplications being pleading for something, "with fasting and sackcloth and ashes." Wasn't enough just prayer and pleading God to ask him for something, but he did it also with fasting. Now, I'm sure we all pray probably at least several times a day, all through weeks, all through months. But we most likely don't fast to the degree that we should. And I'm not here to tell you that you should. I'm here to tell you that you might be neglecting one of the strongest possible powerful elements in your life. Because fasting tells God you are seeking his face, his way, his power to know of him. Of course, we all know the story of Esther in chapter 4. I won't turn there. Esther chapter 4, where she knows what's happening to her people. And she says, all of us need to fast. Not only are we going to fast, we're going to fast 3 days. And she's specific. No food, no water. Now, do you think it was an accident that things happened in the book of Esther like they did? Or do you think God responded to that fast? It's one thing to say we're going to fast so that God gives us this, as opposed to saying we're going to fast and we're going to hand ourselves over to God. And what he responds is what we take. That is difficult, especially when you're fasting for a problem in your life. So our SPS today is, do we understand the power of fasting? Do we understand the power of fasting? Now we'll turn to Nehemiah chapter 1. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hechaliah, "And it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province, they are in great affliction, great distress, and reproach." We can't identify with that because we're a peaceful nation at this point. But when you consider people like what happened in Bangladesh, when you consider people in the Middle East, when you consider what's going on in Gaza and other places like that, they are in great affliction. So we find here, God's people were in great affliction and reproach, verse 3, "And the wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire." So that means the protection, anybody could come in at any time. There wasn't policemen around there. There wasn't protection for families, for children, for wives, for grandmas. "And it came to pass," in verse 4, "when I heard these words, I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days. And he fasted and he prayed before the God of heaven." Do we approach our life like that? Where we see a problem and it takes us so harshly by the heart, and then we say, "God, I need to be with you." Or do we just wait to the Day of Atonement, where we eke it out for 24 hours and go get something to eat? So there's 3 points that I'd like to cover today. The first one is fasting without results. Fasting without results. Secondly, fasting with God's purposes fulfilled. And lastly, fasting successfully means a stronger relationship with God. We do all kinds of things because we think we're going to have a stronger relationship with God. We serve in this area, we serve in that area. But one of the most quiet things, one of the most effective ways that we can get closer to God relationally is fasting. First point, fasting without results. Please come with me to Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58. We're going to read verses 1 through 5 in Isaiah 58, and I'm going to read it from the contemporary English version, so it might sound a tad different than what you have, unless you have the CEV. It says, beginning in verse 1, "Shout the message, don't hold back. Say to my people Israel, you have sinned. You've turned against the Lord. Day after day you worship him, and you seem eager to learn its teachings. You act like a nation that wants to do what's right by obeying his laws. You ask him about justice, and you say you enjoy worshiping the Lord. You wonder why the Lord pays no attention when you go without eating and act humble. But on those same days that you give up eating, you think only of yourselves and abuse your workers. You even get angry and ready to fight. It is no wonder why God won't listen to your prayers." Now, this is not on the Day of Atonement, obviously, because these people have working going on and they're abusing their workers during that period of time. So it's an example, actually, of where they're fasting while they're working. You find in verse 5, it says, "Do you think the Lord wants you to give up eating and to act as humble as a bent-over bush or to dress in sackcloth and sit in ashes? Is this really what he wants on a day of worship? Is this the kind of fast that he wants?" So point 2. Now, fasting with God's purposes fulfilled. Spend more time here, and we'll pick up where we left off, 58 of Isaiah, chapter 58, verse 6. This is in the King James Version, where God says here, it's purely his words, "Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to do the heavy burdens and to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to deal your bread to the hungry, and that you bring the poor that are cast out to your house? When you see the naked, that you cover him, that you hide not yourself from your own flesh?" All of these examples are selfless. All of these examples have to do with things, actions that we ourselves should do. The first point, he covers six of them here. The first point is loosening the bands of wickedness. Let me explain it this way. Everybody knows what a garden hose is. When you turn that garden hose on, that water comes out at a certain rate. Even if you turn it in, say you turn it on all the way. But then, when you go to a fire hydrant and you hook up a hose and you turn on that octagonal dial on the top and that water comes out, it comes out big time where you can't even hold the hose. This is what happens when you fast. God starts to communicate with you in a very hyped up way, in a way where he can get through to you, in a way where now your relationship is going very fast. He's knocking on the door of your heart, and he's trying his best to show you what it means to loosen the bands of wickedness, what it means to do these things, it says here in these two scriptures. Fasting loosens the bands of wickedness. Bands being defined as restrictive measures that keep us from doing something. Ecclesiastes 3. Let's go there, please. Ecclesiastes 3. verse 16. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there as well. When we see wickedness in a place of righteousness, which we see a lot today, it stands in the way of justice. When we fast, it helps loosen those bands that might be in your community, that might be around your family, that might be in your job. It might be anywhere near you. We can fast so that it goes all the way around the globe and it affects people in Bangladesh. There's no other way you can do that. You think I might send some money there. That's not going to loosen the bands of wickedness. If you want to affect brethren in the church, the body of Christ, if you want to affect, for instance, the leadership at home office or your pastor here, then we need, brethren, to get closer to God. It's a personal responsibility. Because you know one thing for sure, when you're close to God, He responds the way He wants to, but you are closer to Him. In 1 John 5, verse 19, it is good to remember what it says here, and we know that we are of God, great, but that the whole world lies in wickedness. The whole world lies in wickedness. When you walk out the door and you go to your car, you're walking into the world of wickedness. It doesn't mean that the world itself is bad. It means that there's wickedness therein. And there is a difference. In Psalm 94, David says something regarding this that we can go there and see. Psalm 94, come there with me, please. Verse 23. Psalm 94, verse 23. In verse 23 it says, "And he shall bring upon them their own iniquity, and shall cut them off in their own wickedness. Yes, the Lord our God shall cut them off." When we fast, He knows how to loosen these bands of wickedness, not only from us, our own bands of wickedness, but from those around us. He knows how to protect you when you get close to Him, when you get under His wing. In Mark 7, let's go there, Mark 7, verses 20 through 23. Mark 7, verse 20. "And he said, that which comes out of the man, that defiles the man. For from inside, out of the heart of men, proceeds evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these things come from inside and defile the man," he says here. All of these things are things we want to avoid. All of these are what we would call bands of wickedness. The only way that we can escape this effectively, because God takes no pleasure in wickedness, is for us to fast and grow close to Him. You want to supercharge your prayers? Fast. You want to get responses that you know God's on your side, whatever that means? Fast. Make a schedule. Think about it. Another point. Fasting not only loosens the bands of wickedness, it also breaks them. The difference between loosening them so you can function in situations, it also breaks them where it makes them go away. In Luke chapter 2, verses 36 and 37, impressive example. Luke 2, verses 36 and 37. "And there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was of a great age and had lived with a husband 7 years from her virginity. Let's say she got married in those days. It was early, 15, 16 years old. He died 7 years after they were married. So about 22, 23, she's a widow at that point, verse 37. She was a widow of about 84 years. Are you getting that? 84 years afterwards. So she's in her hundreds here. So while she was widowed for 84 years, she departed not from the temple, but served God with fasting and prayers night and day. Impressive example. She spent her life saying, I want to be in the face of God all the time. Additionally, fasting lightens heavy burdens. And heavy burdens come in all kinds of ways. They come financially, anxiety, discouragement, neighborhood problems, family problems, work problems. It comes in all kinds of ways. And they can come out of nowhere as well. You could be smiling this morning, and in the afternoon, you say, what happened to today? Car accidents, people getting diseases that are close to you. 2 Corinthians 11, come there with me please, 2 Corinthians 11, verses 27 and 28. No stranger to Paul, these heavy burdens. Verse 27, in weariness, in painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. You see his example in fasting often. Then verse 28, besides those things that are outside, that which comes upon me daily, the care of all the churches, his responsibilities weighed on him. It kept him from sleeping. It made him think he's not doing enough. He needed God's help. And he fasted to get it. Proverbs 12. Come there with me, please. Proverbs 12. Verse 25. The righteous, heaviness in the heart of man makes it stoop, but a good word makes it glad. I'm concentrating on the first half of this. When you listen to Paul here, you have to see he had heaviness of heart. One of the ways that that is lightened is through fasting. You will find in Exodus 23, verse 5, well, let's go there. Let's go there. I have it marked, but we have the time. Let's go there. Exodus 23. Verse 5. Exodus 23, verse 5. Not 22. If you see the donkey of a man that hates you lying under the burden and will forbear to help him, you shall surely help with him. The point here is it's our responsibility to help others that have problems. You might say, well, I don't have a lot of heavy burdens. God has blessed me in these areas. Well, then perhaps we should look around and see where others don't have what we have. Because Isaiah 58 says that. It tells you the kind of fast that God chooses. He says it in that way as if he's saying, this is the kind of heart I want you to have. This is the kind of person I want you to be because I am like this. And then we have in Jesus' day, Jesus telling us this in Matthew 11, which is very comforting to know. Matthew 11, verses 28 through 30. Matthew 11, verses 28 through 30. Jesus tells us, come to me. And one of the ways we do that, brethren, is by fasting. All you that labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest in your soul, to your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So the fast that God chooses is to lighten heavy burdens, and the method of doing it is to get close to him. And the way we supercharge that relationship is by fasting. It, in fact, is a type of worship. Fasting also frees oppression. It frees the oppressed. It'll free oppressiveness. That, too, comes in all kinds of ways. Your age, your health, the fear of death, other people that are over you, other people that work with you that have controlling mentalities, finances, your spiritual well-being. These are all forms of oppression. Proverbs 14, we'll go back there. Proverbs 14. Verse 31, we are told in verse 31 that he that oppresses the poor reproaches his maker. That marries up with Isaiah 58. In Isaiah 58, it tells you to serve the poor, not oppress them. But he that honors him has mercy on the poor. That heart is gained by fasting. It's not a natural thing for us to have those feelings inside of us all the time. But it is when we fast, because God makes it part of you. He starts to live closer in you, directing your heart, directing your attitude, directing you. Luke 11, verse 46, Jesus Christ says this, as Luke records it, verse 46, and he said, woe to you, you lawyers, for you laid men with burdens grievous to be borne, and you yourselves don't touch not the burdens with one of your fingers. So it's okay for others to do it. I don't have time to do it. You do it. To look upon others like they should do the work, like you're too good to do the work, like you don't have time to do the work. But yet we are told that we should go to Christ to get rest. In Zechariah 7, let's go there, for you will find examples of this all over the Bible. I'm just assembling the scriptures and pointing it out so that we can be reminded the importance of fasting and what it does. Zechariah 7, verse 10. And oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor. And let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. These are all forms of oppression when we do that. And he gives the categories of people that don't have the type of protection that they should have. We might gain information and something in our life because we become educated in this particular area. And when we go talk to someone, it often will come out, I know this, you don't. You know it because God gave it to you. And those that have lived to be old enough and watch their abilities dwindle as they get older, know this. You have it for a set period of time. I was in a house this week, where the man got a toothache, turned into an abscess in 2017. Well, the abscess probably would have been under control, except for he did not take the antibiotics that he was supposed to take before and after he went to the dentist. So the infection settled in his spinal column. Between the C2 and C7, destroying the nerves. He's a quadriplegic today. Can't use anything on his hands but his thumbs. He was a biomedical engineer. It's only 7 years ago. If you would have met him 10 years ago, I guarantee you he's not the man he is today. We don't know what God has in mind. The only thing we can do, brethren, in all honesty and all humility, is to fast and get close to God. Sure, you pray. Sure, you study. But for some reason, God turns that hose on when you fast. He opens you up, and he gets inside of you, and he now starts to operate in your life. For good or for bad, he's there with you. These examples are showing us what he doesn't like and what he expects. In Isaiah 54, where, by the way, we're putting in a rolling shower at this guy's house. He hasn't had a shower for 5 years. Ken Prickett and Kenny Prickett and Ken, his dad, are there with me. We're all working together to get this thing solved. It's always humbling to see people who have been struck down in the middle of life and can't use their body the way we can. And I can go on and on about the diesel mechanic that the engine fell on his head and paralyzed him. I can go on and on about it. But you see, when I look at it, I'm like, this is an example for me. You haven't seen it, so it's not an example for you. So I'm trying to share it with you so you can feel inside what I feel for this person. And then you can realize how close you are when you walk out the door to a different life next week. In Isaiah 54, verse 14, it says, "In righteousness shall you be established. You shall be far from oppression. For you shall not fear, and from terror, for it shall not come near you." These are the conditions of someone who fasts and gets close to God. These are the conditions that we want in our life to be called humbly righteous people of God. Next door to where we live, when we moved there 30 years ago, there was an old beat-up fence with donkeys in there, a couple horses, and an old house. This morning, as I sat on the pool deck with my wife having coffee, talking about these kinds of things, I looked out there, and now there's a two-story brand new house that's worth several $100,000, all new fencing, beautiful horses, and we're sitting there, and I think to myself, as I told her, 30 years ago, it looked like that. Now it looks like that. Do you know how quick our life goes by? Fast now. Get God in your life closer. No matter how close it is now, it could be closer tomorrow. It could be closer next week. That's why today we're discussing fasting. Because when you're not close to God, you imagine things about trouble. Until trouble comes. We have yokes, many of us do. Smoking is a yoke. Excessive drinking is a yoke. Pornography is a yoke. Habitual lying is a yoke. Drugs are yokes. Uncontrolled temper, uncontrolled actions, negative thoughts, stress. These are all yokes. The way you break these yokes, brethren, is by fasting. Because these are heavy yokes. These are yokes that push us into the ground, whereas the yoke of Jesus Christ is light. It helps us. Psalm 38, let's go there, Psalm 38. Verses 4 through 10. David says here, "For my iniquities are gone over my head as a heavy burden. They are too heavy for me." He's sad. He's discouraged. He's depressed. He's anxious. He could use a light word. He could use encouragement from somebody. "My wounds stink and are corrupt because of my foolishness." He knows he's brought things on himself. We all do that. "I am troubled. I'm bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long, for my loins are filled with a loathsome disease. There's no soundness in my flesh. I'm feeble and sore broken. I've roared by reason of the restlessness of my heart." He's very disturbed. "Lord, all my desire is before you, and my groanings is not hidden from you. My heart pants. My strength fails me. As for the light of my eyes, it also is gone from me." And David was a man of fasting. He knew how to get to God, and God knew what kind of man he was. We find in Psalm 55, this same man, David says, in Psalm 55, verse 22, "Cast your burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain you. He shall never allow the righteous to be moved." He knew where his strength came from. One more psalm, Psalm 81, verses 3 through 7. "Sing aloud to God our strength. Make a joyful noise to the God of Jacob. Take a psalm and bring here the timbrel, the pleasant harp with the psaltery. Blow up the trumpet and the new moon, time appointed on our solemn feast day." The moon, the sign of the Davidic covenant that Jesus Christ would come and would rule forever. When you see that full moon out there, that's the sign of the Davidic covenant. Every month, click, click, click. Jesus Christ is returning. He's returning. He's going to rule forever. This is what he promised David. "For this was a statute for Israel and a law of the God of Jacob. This he ordained in Joseph for a testimony when he went out through the land of Egypt, where I heard a language that I understood not. I removed his shoulder from the burden. His hands were delivered from the pots." This is now God speaking. "You called in trouble, and I delivered you. I answered you in the secret place of thunder. I proved you at the water of Meribah." God responds when we fast. Next, fasting gives us a heart to help the hungry, the poor, and the naked. It helps us see where they are. It helps us seek it out rather than seek out our own needs. We can get our daily needs sometimes jaded because we do the same thing over and over every day. But we need to break out of that. We need to do things that affect people around us. We need to look at our day and say to ourselves, "How productive was I in the eyes of God?" Nobody else could tell you that but yourself. Matthew 25, please come there with me, Matthew 25, verse 35. We've read this many times before, but the only time it makes any sense, the only time it doesn't blow by, go through your ears and go over your head, is when you have a heart, and you gain that heart by fasting, brethren. "For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in." Verse 36, "Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me." Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, "Lord, when saw we you hungry, fed you, thirsty, gave you drink? When saw we you a stranger, verse 38, took you in, or naked and clothed? What are you talking about? Or when saw you sick or in prison and came to you? And the king shall answer and say to them, truly I say to you, in so much as you have done to the least of my brethren, you've done to me. Not the closest one to you, not the one you know. It's the least. What have you done for the least of brethren, least of people? He has a way of turning things so we can see how much we need him. God has a way of taking words and showing you we aren't oh so great. All we have to do is set everything aside, all the fences we build up, all of the responses that we're making in our mind, why we don't do something, and set them aside for a little bit and just let God talk. Because he has the same thing to say to all of us. He basically tells us, if you're of faith, then show me by your works. James 2. We can go there. James 2. Verse 14. What does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he has faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked, destitute, daily food, and one of you say to them, depart in peace, be you warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what does it profit? Even so faith, this great faith, that Abraham stood for as the father of faithful, and he knew, if it has not works, it's dead. It's dead. He says here, yea, a man shall say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You don't even have to tell me that you're a believer because you're showing me. Fasting puts us in this disposition. There's a lot of financial needs now and probably will continue because as inflation soars, as the government continues to do what it wants to do, print money, give it away, cheat, steal, lie, and murder, you will find that our lives will become increasingly difficult. Don't be surprised. We've been told that it would be this way before the return of Christ. But in Proverbs 19, verse 17, it doesn't say what's the condition of your environment of where you live. It just says this. He that has pity upon the poor lends to the Lord, and that which he has given, will he pay him again. There's no condition of the environment, whether you're in Afghanistan or you're in Gaza or you're in the United States. It applies at all those places. Fasting helps us when our family has problems and we need to stand up and be there for them. 1 John 3. Come there with me, please. 1 John 3. Verses 17 and 18. God, of course, made the family structure, and he certainly understands the dynamics of all kinds. We can't excuse ourselves from a brother or a sister that we don't talk to. They may not respond, but we cannot excuse ourselves. He knows our needs. He knows what arises. He knows mental problems. He knows all of these things. Nothing is too small for God. In 1 John 3:17, he tells us, but whoso has the world's goods and sees his brother have need and shuts up his bowels of compassion from him, how does the love of God dwell in that person? My little children, let us not love in the word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Likewise, a scripture that marries this sentiment quite well is in 1 Timothy 5. We'll go there as well for this point. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. Verse 8 of 1 Timothy 5, "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he is denied the faith, and is worse than an unbeliever." Oh, they don't know the truth. And there you are with your family members, having needs that you are ignoring. Well, God says, those guys, the unbelievers there, are better off than you are. I don't ever want to be in that group. And I don't think any of you do either. And the last point we'll cover is fasting successfully means a stronger relationship with God. We've covered two other points, what fasting isn't and what fasting is, but it also means a stronger relationship with God. We're told in Isaiah 58, Let's go back there again, please. In Isaiah 58, certainly a big fasting chapter, verses 8 through 11, what happens when we fast properly? What the response is, how God is going to see that, what he will do for us if we do that. Verse 8. "Then shall your light break forth as the morning, and your health shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear ward, your rear guard. Then shall you call, and the Lord shall answer. You shall cry, and he shall say, 'Here I am.' If you take away from the midst of you the yoke, the putting forth of the finger of speaking vanity, and if you draw out your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then and only then shall your light rise in obscurity and your darkness be as the noonday." That depression, that anxiety, the problems that you have, whatever it is that weights you down, that makes you heavy, then that shall be light. "And the Lord shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought, as none other can. And make fat your bones, give strength to your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not." Fasting does this. It puts you in this disposition. It is clear in Joel chapter 2. If you want to turn there, we'll read it real fast. Joel 2, verse 12. We're told this. Joel 2, verse 12. "Therefore, also now, says the Lord, turn you even to me with all your heart, and with fasting, and weeping, and with mourning, and rend your heart, and not your garments, and turn to the Lord your God." Clearly, he wants us to fast. There are many scriptures and examples of it. Back in Isaiah chapter 66, Isaiah 66, verse 2. Isaiah 66, verse 2. He tells us that, "For all these things has my hand made, the earth, the environment, everything we see, and all those things have been, says the Lord. But all that is out there, but to this person will I look, even to him that is a poor and a contrite spirit and trembles at my word." And you could add very easily there, "and a person that fasts." Because that's the kind of person he's talking about here. Fasting is a method God has given us to come before him in humility. It's his method. It's his suggestion. He gave us food, and now he gives us what to do when we abstain from it, to nourish our spirit rather than our body. And he will lift us up. Here's a story in Mark 9. Come there with me, please. In Mark 9, verses 17 through 29. We read one earlier, just like this. Mark 9, verses 17 to 29. And one of the multitude, verse 17, Mark 9, answered and said, Master, I have brought to you my son, which has a dumb spirit. Now I'm just reading this for you, but I would like for you to put yourself in this place, that your child has a problem, and you want to take this problem to God. It may not be verse 18 where it tears at him and he foams and he gnashes his teeth and he pines away, and I spoke to your disciples that they should cast them out. It might be some other problem. But the methodology is the same. Verse 19, and he answered and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him to me. So they couldn't do anything with this young person that had this problem. Verse 20, and they brought him to him. And when he saw him, immediately the spirit tore him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming. And he asked his father, how long is it ago since this came to him? And he said, of a child? He's had this problem a long time. And often it has cast him into the fire, into the waters to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, verse 23, if you can believe that all things are possible to him that believes, the basis of fasting is first believing that God is God. And immediately the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help you my unbelief. I want this problem so badly fixed. Verse 25, so when Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying to him, you dumb and deaf spirit, I charge you, come out of him, enter him no more. The spirit cried, as we said earlier, and ran him in two, came out as one dead. Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up. Verse 29, and he said to him, this kind can come forth by nothing else but by prayer and fasting. The superpower of prayer is fasting. When you have something bothering you, when you have a problem, you want to supercharge God's relationship with you and involvement, you need to fast. I didn't make that up. I don't even like to fast. But I'm learning about it. I am learning that you don't have to just abstain from food and water one day. You can take 3 days and say, I'm going to abstain from food. But you know what? I'm going to take 3 days and I'm going to study because I need the energy. I work a little bit in the morning and I got to go do something, so I need some energy, but I'm going to fast. So I'm going to go and I'm going to study and I'm going to pray and I'm going to focus on something that needs your attention, God, and I want your attention. It doesn't mean he's going to give you what you want. But there is power in fasting. When your belief is strong, he will answer. He will do what is best. You know, this isn't in my notes, but when my mom was dying, she had cancer. She had brain cancer. This was 35 years ago now, but it was just the other day, turned 35 years. And she was diagnosed the last week of December that year, and then she died January 26th, a month later. Very aggressive cancer. But we couldn't take care of her anymore, and we didn't know where we were going to put her. We were feeding her with a straw at the time. And so my brother, sister, and I, we decided we would fast. we had a lot of issues going on. I mean, she was in Ohio, was living out in Pasadena, and anyway, there was a lot of issues going on. The biggest issue was, is we didn't know what to do with her. We didn't have a lot of money. My family was poor. My dad had died many years ago, so it was just my mom. So we decided that the three of us to fast. And she didn't have a will. She had a little bit of equity in her house, and she had bills. So we fasted that day, and the very next day, a knock on the door. Now, right away, statistically, think about that. And it's an attorney. It's snowing outside. He has a long, one of those long coats on, you know, and he says that. And he says, is Betty Orris here? And I said, well, no. Well, she's here, but she can't come to the door. He said, well, can I come in? Well, I said, who are you? He says, well, I'm an attorney. I work for so-and-so. I have a check for her. So he comes. He gives her the check. It's a $10,000 check. In those days, that was a fair amount of money. But it paid the bills that she had remaining. But then he also had a will in his briefcase. And he filled out the will. And then we have a time period that has to transpire. For she had brain cancer. So she had to be of sound mind. So she was of sound mind for the period of time. I think it's 72 hours, if I remember right. She was of sound mind. The following week, she started to hallucinate. There was no treatment for her. And statistically, I mean, to come with a $10,000 check, come with the will the day after we fasted, I'm not saying anything other than God was involved. Not because I'm special, not because we're special, not because of any other thing, other than he responded. He responds. You know, we asked the question, do we understand the power of fasting? I don't know if you understood these things before today. I don't know if you ever looked at fasting to see that he wants you to abandon your physical needs and spiritually dwell with him, to talk with him like you would talk to a person, to study his word, and to be with him and develop a relationship with him. And to ask him from Isaiah 58 to loosen the bands of wickedness that are either in your life or around you, to give you relief from heavy burdens if it's a sickness or someone else around you, or you're oppressed because of some reason, financial or whatever it might be, to break any of those yokes that we talked about, whether it's alcoholism or drinking or whatever it might be. You know, to give you a heart to help the needy and the poor, to don't see a person's color, but to see a person as an individual that God made. To ask him to give you an approach that is like his. If you do that, you seek him like that, and you seek it through fasting, he will not ignore you. And you will be a better person, and we will be a better church. Have a good Sabbath.